Ieri abbiamo cominciato a parlare con Eyal e abbiamo pensato le cose per introdurre la nostra discussione. Forse è interessante a cominciare a pensare sulla questa relazione fra Eichmann e questa figura del Stasi. E tutti i persone sono persone hanno fatto. Maybe I'll try it in English because I'm a little nervous.
Get it in English.
No, because it's a complex sort of arrangement of ideas. I think, you know, we were thinking of how to begin the discussion, and the most interesting thing that we found as a beginning point to think about is this relation between Eichmann and this Stasi figure. And what's interesting is that Eichmann, in a way, is very easy to understand, not easy, but for us, like in the discussion we had after the showing the film, was very interesting because Eichmann is someone you can see the problem right away. He's a specialist. He doesn't see the big picture. He's involved in this sort of bureaucratic language, and he does what he's told. And it's interesting and important to understand how this ordinary activity can be a part of something horrific and catastrophic. The second figure of the Stasi complicates somehow our relation to this kind of state apparatus person, because unlike Eichmann, this person has a sense of a bigger picture, and he really believes in that. Or it's a questionable thing. Much of what I'm saying has to be put into question, but this is more a large, the first impression one has is that he seems to believe in the state, or he says, if we can take his word for it, in what it's doing. He has a sense of a bigger idea, and he sees what he does within the functioning of this bigger picture. So if Eichmann is this specialist who's completely detached from how what he's doing is creating that violence, the second person of the Stasi complicates, because he too is kind of a functionary of a state, it would appear. Of course, all of these could be put into question, but he more or less has a sense of what he does, his actions, and its relation to a larger cause. And maybe it complicates it or it simplifies to condemn him. But the part that's interesting, there are many things that come up in his testimony that are interesting, but one of them is precisely his sense that his condemnation of society and its individualism today resonates somehow, even if what he's done you don't agree with. So anyway, I just thought that could be some preliminary remarks of putting these two films together, and then maybe Giorgio has prepared something different, and then Eyal might say something different, and then we can try to. Va bene?
No, in un certo senso quello che pensavo di fare riguarda il problema che tu hai posto, nel senso che mi sembra che in entrambi i due film ci sia una struttura analoga, una struttura che concerne la complessità, cioè delle serie temporali che sono messe in relazione. Ecco, cercherò di chiarire questo, e secondo me, in certo modo, anche la tua domanda in questo senso si chiarisce, no? Quello che mi pare definisca entrambi i film, io forse parlerò soprattutto dello specialista, ma mi pare che anche nell'altro la struttura di cui parlo sia presente, è che appunto sono messe in relazione in questo film due serie temporali distinte. Nei primi trattati medievali sulla storia che noi abbiamo, per esempio quello post-medievale di Jean Bodin, si distinguevano sempre, non, quando si parlava di storia, non si parlava mai di una sola storia, si parlava di tre storie. Per esempio Bodin distingue la historia naturalis, la storia naturale, chiaro, no? La storia del mondo nel suo aspetto naturale, la storia umana, quelli che noi chiamiamo i fatti storici, e una terza che Bodin chiama la storia divina. L'interessante non è tanto analizzare i singoli aspetti qui, ma il fatto che la storia risultava da una complessità, da una serie distinta di tempi, series temporum, serie temporali. Ecco, quali sono, secondo me, nel film di Eyal le serie temporali che adesso cercherò di chiarire? Beh, mi pare chiarissimo. Se prendiamo lo specialista, abbiamo da una parte le 350 ore di film filmate da Leo Hurwitz durante il processo che va dall'11 aprile 1961 al 14 agosto 1961, quindi questa è una serie temporale che è la cronologia, la cronaca delle sedute del processo, no? Questa è la base, quindi c'è una prima serie temporum, questo materiale filmico che non fa che riprodurre le sedute del processo. E nel film di Eyal mostra ogni tanto anche il Chuck, cioè, quindi proprio lì sono presenti. Questa è la serie temporale prima da cui si parte. Però Eyal, e lo dichiara anche nel testo che ha scritto, subito sostituisce o sovrappone a questa serie temporale, mi sembra, un'altra serie temporale che è invece, come lui dice, la progressione storica reale degli eventi. Cioè la deportazione e lo sterminio degli ebrei dalla fine degli anni 30 al 1944. No? Quindi vedete, sono due serie temporali perfettamente distinte. La prima è la serie temporum della seduta del processo, cronologica. Potremmo chiamarla, qui ci sarebbe una cronaca, questa è la cronaca del processo. Nella seconda, appunto, non è più una cronaca, sono i fatti storici, l'istoria umana di Bodin. Qui sono proprio gli eventi storici che nella Germania nazista portano alla deportazione e allo sterminio degli ebrei. Ecco, quindi queste sono le prime due serie che secondo me è la struttura del film. E io direi che dalla messa in relazione di queste due serie temporali, in cui poi la seconda si sovrappone alla prima, no? Mi pare tu lo dici chiaramente nel testo che hai scritto, da questa messa in relazione di queste due series temporum, di queste due serie temporali distinte, proprio distinte, sono una 11 aprile 14 agosto 1961, l'altra Germania 1938, sono due serie temporali distinte, vengono messe in relazione, da questa messa in relazione risulta quella che io chiamerei la scrittura del film, che potremmo chiamare allora perché è sempre una serie di tempi, la cronografia che Eyal Sivan fa, mettendo in relazione queste due serie temporali, si produce una terza serie, come in Baudin, una terza serie che è la scrittura del film, che è il film che noi vediamo. Però appunto non bisogna mai dimenticare che il film che noi vediamo, che è anche lui quindi una serie temporum, una serie temporale, risulta però dalla sovrapposizione, dalla relazione complessa tra queste due prime serie di tempi. E quindi c'è proprio una complessità in senso etimologico, cioè vengono varie serie temporali, vengono messe in relazione e la serie finale che risulta è il film che vediamo, che però non, appunto, è complesso. Come appunto in Baudin, nei teorici medievali, la storia è sempre naturale, umana, divina, così qui c'è il processo, i fatti storici, la progressione storica dei fatti dello sterminio e il film, la temporalità del film, no? Che se avete visto il film la temporalità è complessa, nel senso che se si deve selezionare da 350 ore un'ora e mezza, già questo mostra l'operazione anche forte, ma anche violenta che viene fatta su questo materiale, no? Ecco, però è sempre fatta perché alla base però c'è questa come dire, ciò che alla base è questa doppia struttura. E questo mi pare che vale anche per il film di Aus Liebe zum Volk, perché lì non c'è ovviamente il materiale filmico, anche se ci sono poi dei film che vengono usati, non c'è il materiale filmico con una serie continua, però c'è la voce fuori campo, del, no? Ci sono le memorie, insomma c'è questo quest'uomo che racconta quello che gli è avvenuto, ciò che ha vissuto, quello che ha fatto, e questo appunto anche lì corrisponde alla prima serie Stemporum. Ecco, nel film, quindi in questo risponderei alla tua domanda, c'è un'analogia forte in entrambe le cose, si capisce bene questa analogia con risultati e operazioni differenti, cioè nei due casi l'operazione ovviamente della terzo piano, la cronografia che fai al Sival, nei due casi diversa ovviamente, no? Però un doppio piano di partenza c'è, anche lì è identico, questo racconto e i fatti storici di quello che ha fatto la Stasi corrispondono abbastanza bene ai primi due. Nel film, poi invece, Lo specialista, mi pare che ciò che alla fine, come dire, l'operatore di agency, ciò che mette insieme queste due strutture e anche il risultato che viene prodotto da questa relazione, è questa idea arentiana del crimine burocratico. Mi pare che in fondo la cosa più, la messa in relazione di queste due serie di tempori, ciò che risulta e anche ciò che permette in fondo la messa in relazione è l'idea arentiana del crimine burocratico, no? Della malità del male. Ecco, però proprio qui ci sono secondo me delle cose particolarmente interessanti nella scrittura filmica del film, che penso, non so, credo che tu ne fossi cosciente, lo so, io ti dico quello che ho visto. Cioè, quindi c'è il crimine burocratico di Eichmann, che se l'avete visto risulta, c'è neanche bisogno di parlarne, la Arendt l'aveva già illuminato. Però nel film si vede un'altra cosa molto importante, e cioè che al crimine burocratico di Eichmann, che è un mistero, il mistero burocratico del crimine di Eichmann, notate l'analogia tra le due parole mistero e ministero, no? Lui agisce ministerialmente come un funzionario di ministero e la sua azione è un mistero del male, no? A questo mistero del crimine burocratico nel film corrisponde il mistero del processo che ha luogo lì, no? Credo che chiunque ha osservato con cura, e quindi penso che sia stato il risultato dell'operazione cronografica che tu hai fatto, c'è una corrispondenza anche proprio materiale tra le sigle e i numeri degli uffici e delle pratiche che Eichmann continuamente evoca a partire dal suo famoso ufficio, così chiama, quarta sezione, quarta B4, una serie infinita di cifre, di cose, e le sigle e i numeri delle centinaia di documenti che si accumulano nel processo, che riempiono il tavolo della corte, e questa simmetria è così forte che a un certo punto vediamo Eichmann animarsi, si sente a casa sua lì. Cioè quel processo è come il suo ufficio, quella piccola camera di vetro, infatti c'è tutto, si comporta come nel suo ufficio ed è felice di questa corrispondenza, no? E quindi che è la corrispondenza tra due misteri burocratici, il mistero del crimine che Eichmann ha compiuto e il mistero della punizione, della pena, che anche lui, anche esso è un mistero perfettamente analogo, no? E quindi con questi due luoghi incredibili, da una parte quindi, no, ancora la serie tema, da una parte l'ufficio o gli uffici, perché sono vari uffici di Eichmann nella Germania dal 38 al 44, e dall'altra Bet Amishpa, che in ebraico significa la cassa della giustizia, no? Perché il processo, la corte, quando entra la corte si sente una voce che dice Bet Amishpa. Cioè la corte entra, ma però letteralmente significa la casa della giustizia. No? Quindi c'è il mistero del crimine e il mistero della legge. E questa cosa appunto nella scrittura cinematografica di Chevalier è fortissima. Io l'ho percepita con grande forza. No? si vede non solo in questo caos delle sigle, dei numeri da una parte e dall'altra, ma anche tra la corrispondenza, in un certo senso, sinistra e inquietante tra Eichmann e il procuratore Hausner, no? Che è una specie di corrispondente di Hausner. Se uno non sapesse nulla, penserebbe che il nazista è Hausner. No? Se voi non sapeste nulla della storia, vi fanno vedere questo film, vedete che da una parte c'è un signore gentile e così, e dall'altra c'è una specie di nazista che è il procuratore. Questa è una cosa proprio evidente. No? Però questo corrisponde appunto al mistero della pena e della giustizia e al mistero del crimine. Insomma, no? È quasi, cioè, veramente una corrispondenza tra due misteri che è interessantissima. No? Credo che questo sia molto intenzionale nel film, perché la prima scena si vede il procuratore che accusa Eichmann esattamente di quello di cui i nazisti accusavano gli ebrei, cioè di non essere un uomo, di essere un animale. Cioè, la prima scena, il procuratore dice: quest'uomo ha commesso dei delitti tali che non è un essere umano, è un animale, che è l'accusa che facevano i nazisti non erano esseri umani, erano animali, e quindi dovevano morire come animali. Insomma, ecco, questo, adesso che mi fermo, però solo per dirvi che la complessità della struttura, proprio della composizione delle serie temporali da cui risulta il film, a questo corrisponde anche una complessità di ciò che poi viene mostrato, no? Per esempio questa corrispondenza tra questi due luoghi, Beit HaMishpat e il luogo del crimine, che non viene mai mostrato, per esempio i film non vengono mai fatti vedere, no? Si vede solo la faccia di Eichmann, però ci sono queste due cose, il mistero del male, il mistero della giustizia e questa misteriosa corrispondenza tra i due. E questo, appunto, in un altro modo, completamente diverso, perché è completamente diverso, forse c'è anche nel film sulla Stasi, perché anche lì c'è questo, nella rivendicazione idealista di questo signore, c'è un che di Beit HaMishpat, della casa della giustizia. Vabbè, poi mi fermo e discutiamo.
L'avantage que tu es toujours clair. I understand Italian, so you can ask me whatever you want in Italian, and I hope that you will ask. But I will try to speak in English if you don't mind. I'm very interested in this idea that George just put up, which is the chronography, this idea of the chronography, I mean, the three times. But I'm wondering, as a beginning, what about the fourth time, which is the time of the spectator, which is not anymore the time of the recording, 61, March 61, and the end of the process, which is not the chronology of history with big H, which is not the chronology of the film, but is the relation of the spectator to his present time, which will be what can be considered as the analogical time, the time of analogy. And it suddenly became very clear to me that maybe we have to talk about this fourth time, which means that it's not anymore what we could consider as historical films. They are not films about history, past history, but they are films about present. It means the present of the spectator. And I was thinking about it when Giorgio just spoke about this present in the glass booth, which is the possibility to see Eichmann, in fact, a few years older than what he was in Berlin, 16 years just older, but he's in a present. I mean, there is the body over there, that he is in his, in French we say, in his milieu. He is integrated within the most familiar think that he have. I mean, if we think about who is leading the trial, in fact, is Eichmann. He's the only one that really knows the papers. He's the only one that really knows the document.
Like in the past.
I mean, he embodies I mean, in his body, a knowledge that for the others is a mystery. He has embodied something which is the truth of the practice, I would say. He is embodying the truth of the practice. Why, for the others in the court, the attorney general, or for the judges, is the mysterious of the practice. I mean, Eichmann, he's current in a permanent jubilation, permanent jubilation of just imagine that for 16 years he was isolated from his office. He was in Argentina.
And
suddenly he comes back home. And this home is the house, the home, bayit in Hebrew. George is saying casa della giustizia. I would say casa del giudizio. Mishpat, giudizio, not tzedek, which is justitia, giudizio, the house of the justitia. And he's within this glass booth, he's isolated from the general environment, and he wants to continue to show to himself and for the environment that he is the good worker. He continues to take notes. He continues to work with the paper. He is arranging his paper. And in this moment, I would like to believe that he breaks those three times that we'll be talking, and he's coming to a permanent present. To a permanent present. He's continuing to work. I mean, this is the logic. He's saying, there is a moment that Eichmann will say, it was the time of criminal law. He continues, and now he is in the time of judgment, which is the time of judgment is the continuation of the time of the criminal action, judgment. If you think about the Stasi person, and there is an analogy, he is also in the time of the judgment. He's saying, there was the time of the past, there is the time of the present. He is present, but there is our present. There is no regime that can live without us, without us. And he's finishing the film, the part, see, where the film returns, I hope, on itself, and he's saying, we will leave others to betray our ideals. Right? So he's in the time of the judgment. So we have this complexity of time. But this fantastic proposal that George does have its explanation, if you want, within a practice, within a practice of let's give it this horrible notion of crafting. How we craft this time? How you would say crafting in Italian?
Lo plasmiamo, lo rifacciamo, lo plasmiamo, lo formiamo.
So
artigianalmente,
exactly. This artisan, this. I mean, how it comes. I think that the first thing is to acknowledge that the deviation of the material, the bringing the material, the raw material. Material, when I'm saying, I'm not talking only about the video material, the 61 material. I think the material of history, what was defined before as the chronology of history, to bring this material and to say, despite the fact that we're talking about the event, with all this discourse, cultural discourse about its unicity, uniqueness, absolute evil, this material, both chronology of history and the video material can be a gaze on the present. Can be a gaze of the present, which is Eichmann, and this is what cinema gives us, he is a living person. He lives on the screen. For us, spectator, he is in the present. He is not coming from the past. There is one image in the one moment in the film that it's a past moment. It's when the attorney general is saying, and I ask to condemn this man to death. And why I'm saying that this is a past moment? Because of the materiality. It's scratched. It's old material. This is material that comes from the past. By the way, it's an absolute effect because the material was video, and all what you see, this film moment, it was just done in a laboratory. It was to push this idea. I ask the court to condemn this man to death. It's to push it to the past. Why? Because it belongs to that moment, which is 61, 62, the trial. It doesn't belong to our moment. But all the other material, in fact, the work was to erase the oldness of the material. The material is not anymore an old material. Let's stop just 1 second, if you allow me, about this what is archive material? The recognition of the material is an archive. When we look at archival films, what we are being shown is the time that passed from the event where it was filmed to the moment that we see it. Okay? We see the time on the material, scratches, old, lack of texture, etc. And it tells us it's old, but this time that is inscribed on the material is a fake time. Nobody filmed material, if we look at material, from the 50s, it didn't have scratches. Means the material was a new material in the 50s. When we look at it now and we see with scratches and it's gray, etc., in fact, what we see the time that passed. It means it's just a sign saying this is all this comes from the past. And one of the works that was done on the Eichmann, it was to insist on this, what I am trying to call the fourth time, the time of the present material. I mean, the figure of Eichmann is not an archaic figure, is a contemporary figure. Right? Both Aaron and George are talking about this idea of the contemporaneous of this figure. Bureaucratic crime is not an archaic thing. It's a contemporary idea. Contemporary, I'm not saying modern, contemporary. It's a present time. It doesn't, of course, mean everybody is Eichmann. And this is not what I'm trying to say. So one of the actions was how to relate the spectator. And when I'm saying spectator, I'm the first one. I'm the one that has spectator of the material. To relate it and to be in the present. To be in the present. It means that we're coming into what history of cinema, or I love this idea of the chronography, I would say the chronos of chronography, the history, the time of cinema taught us, which is to lie truly. To lie truly. How you say to lie truly?
Mentire con verità.
Mentire veritamente. Veramente. Mentire veramente.
Con verità.
Why is it? Let's take the very first moment of appearance of Eichmann on the screen. You know, there is a moment that he takes off his glasses. Everybody that has glasses, you know it. You know it, George, you know it. Glasses do not make any sound. Cinema taught us, and it was invented by sound engineers, that in cinema, glasses make sound. Look at fiction films. You will hear that glasses make sound. When somebody speaks, the voice covers the sound of the body. In cinema, and when I'm saying in cinema, as the art of the touching the event, what we would call manipulation, the body makes sound in parallel to the voice. You hear this. And suddenly this line, this relation, which is completely different to what we know from our experience, give us the impression, and I would avoid getting into the Deleuzian idea of affect, which is, I found it very problematic, but give us the impression, I prefer the notion of impression, that he is real, that he is there, that he is there. Which shifts immediately the specialist as a work from what we recognize as a documentary, which is complex relation to authenticity, into the time, which this is for me the time of the chronography, which is the time of the fiction. This is the time of the fiction. Which raises the fundamental paradox, which is the time of the fiction is the time that we relate affectively to it. Think about just all those images that we have of horror, of death, of real news, things that we see, that there is, it's real, it exists, it happened, but in the same time, there is a distance of affection. While when we will look at a fiction film and we will see an actor that got $1 million to play somebody that is killed, suddenly it will be very emotional. This strange relation between the fiction, that we know that there is a fiction over there. It means the mise-en-scène of a reality, not a mise-en-scène with reality, which would be the definition of what documentary is, mise-en-scène with reality, but a mise-en-scène of a reality. If we think about the fiction, we have a relation to the fiction, which is a paradoxical relation. There is this relation, we see there is a love story, and they separate, and we will cry with the actor while we know that the actor gets a good salary to play the divorced person. We will hear testimonies of divorce or of rape in the documentary, and we will keep this distance to it. So the game, if you want, and I would love to use this notion because I don't think that it's a game as such, but I think that this is exactly what I understood by reading The Device. And The Device is how you work on the boundary. You work on the boundary between the documentary and the fiction. And the boundary is lying truly. And the boundary is not a limit, boundary is not a clear border. Boundary is the place where it negotiates. It negotiates. And in fact, the living figure of Eichmann on the screen will be a figure that reflects on another figure that we can meet in a moment. I know for myself, but I imagine from others that watch the film, that suddenly they start to see Eichmanns. They start to see Eichmanns. The phantom is there. Find it in the health security. You start to read. You read some newspaper. You say, but this structure of discourse, I heard it already. I mean, the figure becomes an analogical figure. It is Eichmann. It is Eichmann, but in the same time, it's a figure. It's not only Adolf Eichmann, son of Karl, born in Austria, etc., etc. He's not only that historical figure. He's a figure. If we talk about the Stasi person, which I think that the huge difference and what we'll make through this difference, we will find the similarity. We'll find the similarity, and I will talk after, if you will ask me, I can explain more about this notion of the crafting.
About the notion of crafting.
What was done, in fact? What was done in terms of voice in the Eichmann trial? What was done in terms of images? There is a lot of, let's call it technique, but let's understand that this technique, it's not the performing technique. Okay? It's come out of this idea of to have a double spectator, the spectator in the court, the spectator that is looking at the film, and how to bring the spectator of the film inside the court. Okay? How to close times, if you want. I mean, to bring time together. If I'm thinking about, just a second, I mean, thinking loudly about the Stasi person, I think that the big, huge difference, and I said this huge difference will bring us similarity, is the fact that we don't have a body, but we have a voice. There is no body, but there is a voice. And at the same time, this is the body. Because we don't have a body, we're in the permanent, I hope, we're in the permanent questioning of where is the body. And in the moment that there is the question, but where is the body? Where is he? Maybe he's somewhere in the image. Maybe he's there. Or anyway, you know, he's hiding behind. There is a permanent existence of a body on the film. And once again, the question is the question of the time, this fourth time, if I say, of the spectator. What? Which is encapsulated into one question, is what am I looking at? What am I looking at? I mean, what am I observing while I'm watching? What is the nature of what am I seeing? Do I see a chronology of the past? Do I see a present? The discourse is in present. I mean, I think that René is saying in the very beginning, in his introduction, he's saying it straightly, without any hesitation, his testimony. But René tells that this is a testimony. Right? If it's a testimony, there is a witness. But he's talking in present time. While the testimony and the witnessing refers to the idea of a past. No, he's talking in the present. This is the last day of my work. He's talking on the present. And the different natures of the material with the different qualities, with a detail, if you want, which is that part of the material that we see is material that I filmed. I constructed observation cameras. I filmed in present time, material which is surveillance material. Okay. And I used dissident movies, films made by the opposition, as if it was Stasi material, from the simple reason, the thing, the opposition in East Germany, in order to film, they had to hide, to become invisible, which is exactly the Stasi. They were invisible. So what we have, what is inscribed in the screen, is the action of invisibility. Right? Those materials put all together in our aim to create a time, which is the permanent present time, once again, of what am I looking at? And asking the question that is the forbidden question when we look at media. It's not what it is about, but what am I looking at? It means what they're trying to show me. What they're trying to show me, what they're trying to hide. What? The body. The body is not present anymore. And I would like to finish just with one element, which is both in the Stasi film, or the Aus Liebe zum Volk, I love you all. Not I did love you, I love you. I continue to love you all in the present. And in The Specialist, the action, the analogical movement is that the distance that both actors, let's call them perpetrators, both actors, Eichmann and Major B or Major S, Major B, acted within a distance from the result of their action. Arendt explained it very well. There is this distance. Eichmann is in Berlin, or he's in Vienna, or he's in Budapest. He's not in the train station. He's not in the place of the killing. He's out in this distance is a condition to the action. Mr. B, the major, he's with the distance of the image. He's looking at society through the image, its representation. And both of them, they don't see. They don't see. So the big difference is that one have on his hand the possibility to see, the illusion of possibility to see everything, because you have a lot of images, everything is filmed, everything is under surveillance, and the only thing that he wants to see, he doesn't see, which is the counter-revolution. When they see the people, they say, this is not the people. They are screaming, we are the people, we are the people, and he says, this is not the people. So he have images, more he have images, more they have images, less they see. And Eichmann, more he have details, numbers, figures, and not only Eichmann. And this I think that Giorgio just said fantastic. The court itself. More they are in the details, more they are in the number of the documents, more the mystery of the event accentuate. But who is the one that in fact bridges this gap between the impossibility to see, between the impossibility to understand? It's the spectator. And this is the action of bringing both the event and the present, which is one, it's the mystery, our mystery, facing the mystery of the court of how they don't see. In fact, how they don't, why we need all this huge trial of months to Eichmann, while we could say to Eichmann, what did you do? I did this and this. This is what you're guilty of. But this is the only thing that the court is not saying to Eichmann. When Eichmann said, I just arranged train, they're saying, no, you did more than arrange train. As if just arranging train is okay. Right? They don't see that he's saying exactly what he did. And what exactly he did, it's a huge crime. No, they want him to say more. They want him, this Eichmann, to solve all the question of the extermination. The Stasi, he doesn't see also. And the one that carrying the burden of seeing and understanding is the spectator. Imagine that the films are bringing us not any answer, in fact, but just the question of its beginning. It's not the question of the guiltness. It's the nature of the guilt. I think that.
It's interesting that so in the Stasi film, if I forgot exactly what you said, but I think it's like that, the voice, we don't have the body, we have the voice, but the voice is the matter, is the materiality of the body.
Yeah, but this I learned from you. I mean, I think that it's fundamental. This is fundamental, which is not anymore the voice. You know, there was this all the 70s theory on documentary, all those fundamentals, which are Bill Nichols and Renov and all those people that we were obliged to read and obliged to teach, right? They were telling us about the voice of God and the voice over in documentary. But this is, in a way, it's a superficial vision. It's a superficial vision. You say the voice over, it's just the voice of God and it's the one that directs us how to look. Now, how we get into the thing that the voice is body, is embodying the body. I mean, the moment, think about this moment, which is a construction, the moment that he is sitting in the car, I'm saying he as if he was there, right? We have the major, he's sitting in the car, we have this image through the car, through the window, they're surveying a street, and we hear the whistling. This is my musician who did it, of course. The musician embodied the fact that there is a person inside the car that is getting bored, right? He's looking at the steam and we hear as if he's smoking, because the musician, while he was whistling, he was smoking also. Suddenly the voice, there is a body, there is somebody. So it's not kind of coming on the image, it's coming from the image. And the image itself, the image, not what there is in the image, makes noise. Remember, in the have its sound. The image have its sound. Remember, both in the Eichmann and in the Stasi, there is the moment that there are artifacts of the material overexposed. You know, so we hear the camera moves. So we hear. So it means that the material also have a body, lying truly. What do you think about lying truly?
It makes me to think of the definition that Pessoa gave of art and poetry. The poet is a man who feigns so perfectly, who lies so perfectly. He feigns, feigns, can you say in English?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So perfectly, then he even feigns what he really feels. The only moment of the truth, the fourth moment.
No? Yeah, which is a culmination. We'll say in English culmination, in culmination. I mean, everything comes this to that moment, the moment of the relation, the moment of that relation. I mean, he's there. You know, there is this. The very beginning, the first scene when we are coming, there is. You remember, in the specialist, the very first image of the film, very very first image. It's the empty.
Empty. Very very. Yes. It comes often, yeah. Also in a second time. That's why I think that the place is important. Bet HaMishpat.
The place is fundamental because this is the determination. But how do we see the place from the beginning? We see, I mean, you come into a room to see the film. And what do you see? You see the room that you were coming to see the film.
And this was in the Leo Hurwitz material, or you artificially produced?
No. This was the word. There were images because they were leaving the cameras on. Okay, but the starting point is, imagine you come to cinema, you look for a seat, your seat. The screen opens, and what you see the first image that you saw. I mean, in what space we are? We are in the space of present, or we are seeing a material of the past? Mm-hmm. And also, we are facing, we know that the game will start. The device is that the condition of the existence of both films is that they have spectators. They don't exist without the spectator. I mean, if not, we have only this division of times. There is the chronology that exists around it, the history, and we have the history of the time of the trial, and we have the materiality, but they're all together, and this is what allows to start. I open the seventh session of the trial. This is the first session of the film, is I open the seventh session. It's not I open the first, I open the seventh, and we are just inside.
Well, possiamo aprire la nostra discussione per fare domande. Forse io voglio cominciare con una domanda sulla verità, perché questa settimana abbiamo letto diversi testi sulla verità e voglio chiedere forse una domanda grande, però per voi... come situare, can you say that in Italian? How do you situate a kind of relation to verità through these two works, which then, I mean, it's very open because there's a question of the testimony, the oath, but also what you were talking about. Perché penso questo... No, Eyal, hai usato questo... idea del mentire con verità o mentire veritamente, forse è importante capire come usiamo questo termine, verità, questo termine verità, come e come, how is it operating in this for you, in this work? How can we kind of have a relation to an idea of truth through this work? And maybe in relation to you, Giorgio, and your work, it's just interesting what you would, how you would move through an idea of truth through these works, or, you know, these two possible...
It's a tricky question. It's a tricky question because we have to understand what we understand by the notion of truth, right? It's not, it's a common notion, but first of all, what we understand. I would start from a minor idea. I mean, I will start from first of all, I would say a Pascalian hypothesis. Let's take, for granted that Eichmann, on one hand, and the Stasi person are telling the truth. And if they're telling the truth, I'm not saying they're telling their truth, they're telling the truth. They're telling a truth, if you want, but they're telling the truth. And if they're telling the truth, what it means? What it means that to have this hypothesis at the very beginning, that they're telling us the truth. And from that moment, if there is a true base, the truth, which is they are exposing it, I can relate to this truth by a device which by definition lies image. It means that if I have to define what's the work on those two films, it's la mise en scène of their truth.
So it was the lie. Your work was the lie.
Yeah. I would like to stop here for a moment to hear Giorgio. Maybe I will. But it's this idea. I mean, I work with the lie. They are saying the truth. I need this lie, which is the image, the crafting of the image, in order to make a mise en scène of the truth.
Yeah, but also because their truth is, so to speak, a documentary truth. So it's a correspondence from between words and facts, corrispondenza tra parole e fatti, cioè una verità documentaria. Mentre la verità che tu cerchi di raggiungere non è documentaria, appunto, no? E non potrebbe essere, perché appunto sono tempi diversi, appunto, no? La verità non è in quel momento del passato, ma è in una costellazione tra passato e presente.
How will put it? In the moment that there is an existence in the present, there is a truth that emerges. There is the truth that emerges, not the truth of the facts, because those are. This is the inherent notion of the documentary, and it's also maybe what keeps, what should be kept in the idea of documentary, that there is it documents the nature of the documentary material, that it documents facts. The Eichmann trial happened. The events that are told happened. The material done by Leo Horvitz existed, pre-existed to its manipulation, to its mise en scène. The person that is behind, the body that is behind the voice of the Stasi person, exists. The images that we see, we know that they belong to Ivan. We know. I'm not sure that I have an answer about this mystery of the recognition of the documentary as a document. I mean, we recognize the documentary as a documentary, as we recognize the fiction as a fiction. In the moment that there is an acknowledgement of exactly what Giorgio called il fatto storico, the historical facts, if there is an acknowledgement of historical facts in that moment, the cinematic work, whatever it will manipulate, whatever it will use, it just means of mise en scène of that. It's not a creating a lie. It's not the creation of a different truth. It's the mise en scène of that truth. Just an anecdote which is interesting is, I was saying that there is this condition of recognition that the historical facts are or were. There was a trial, in the trial of revisionist or a negationist, as it was called, Irving in London, that took a few years ago, somebody that denies the existence of the gas chambers and the fact of the extermination of the Jews, the Poles, and homosexuals. Israeli government, the lawyers. The lawyers that were representing the British government against Irving in his trial asked Israel government to release Eichmann's memories. Eichmann, while he was in jail during all the trial, he wrote a book, Memories, his memories, Memoir. He sang in the trial. And for many years, Israel government never published those memories. And while the Irving trial happened, they asked, British government asked the Israeli government to have Eichmann memories, and they presented them against Irving. Which means that the Nazi SS officer testified against a revisionist in order to tell him why, I mean, to tell him through the memories, the facts happened. Which shifts us to another idea of, and this maybe will be the starting of an argument, a debate between us, is who is the witness? Who is the witness? Not what is the witness, who is the witness? What is the status of those both figures as witnesses of crime? This very important, for me, distinguish that Primo Levi is doing when he is writing the preface of Rudolf Hess' book. Rudolf Hess, the commander of Auschwitz, that wrote Memories, and Primo Levi is writing in memory. Io non sono il... I'm not the witness. Io non sono il...
Testimone.
I'm the survival. He is the witness. You know, this distinction between the survival and the witness. And suddenly, who is the witness? The perpetrator. Those two figures, Eichmann and the Stasi, they are the witness. Why? Because they are bearing truth.
Very, very interesting, because in a certain
in
un punto di vista strettamente giuridico l'accusato non può essere testimone, è un accusato, quindi. Sì, però tranne con questo strano fenomeno che poi è la confessione, perché l'accusato che confessa condanna se stesso e quindi testimonia contro se stesso, per così dire, però tecnicamente un accusato non può essere chiamato a testimoniare.
Mm-hmm. Because there is the idea that he is not bearing truth. He can be only accused. So if he is accused, he is obviously lying somewhere. This is what the court is trying to say all the time to him. No, you're lying. But he's saying the truth. I mean, let's take the hypothesis, the Pascalian hypothesis. And what happened if he's saying the truth? He's not a criminal. He is not a huge criminal. And if Mr. B is just saying the truth, that really he worked for general interest and not because of selfish interest, that he works for the ideal of the cohesion and social cohesion, so he is not a criminal. How to return? Who writes the indictment against Eichmann? Who writes the indictment against Mr. B? Mr. B writes the indictment against Mr. B. Eichmann writes the indictment against himself. Tell us what you did. This is what you're accused of. I mean, how we close the thing, but this is what we cannot accept in the house of judgment.
E tecnicamente non è una confessione.
No.
Cioè, né Eichmann né Mr. B confessano, cioè ammettono la colpa, ma dicono la verità, quindi sono testimoni e non accusati, perché un testimone non può confessare, un accusato non può testimoniare, questo è l'incrocio, no? Un testimone non può confessare, può solo testimoniare, l'accusato non può testimoniare, può solo confessare, e questi non fanno né una cosa né l'altra, cioè si invece è una specie di inversione delle parti. Io adesso sono loro che adesso siete voi che dovete fare domande, basta, no?
Io volevo chiedere se potevi spiegare meglio il passaggio.
passaggio sulla costruzione del tempo, che hai fatto a un certo punto parlando del materiale filmico e di come poi sei intervenuto su questo materiale.
Let's take one of the times that that Giorgio proposed, which is the chronic of the process of the trial. Yeah, chronologia del processo. That we have it through the material of Horowitz. Right, the first tape he start to tape in the first day. Right, okay. First of all, we know. A very simple thing, but I will repeat it, that the time, the chronographia is based on the idea of the ellipsis. Okay? It's an elliptic time. You know, somebody is coming to a building. Ellissi.
Ellittico, sì, certo.
Ellittico.
Un tempo.
I will explain what I mean. You know it. You make images. Somebody is coming into a building, getting inside, close the door, and the next image that we have, it's the lights of a elevator, 1, 2, 3, and the next one is coming, opening a door of a house, close, and the next image is drinking coffee. Okay, we have here four shots, one after the other, and we know exactly. And it can happen, what I just described can happen over 3 minutes, while in actual time it will take 10. Okay, so this, there is a time, and between the cuts, there is a construction of time. Something happened. And it's just a mental time. Nothing is very original in what I'm saying. I'm just describing a situation. So first of all, it's to acknowledge that within 128 minutes, 192,000 images, we can put 9 months. More than that. We can put 5 years. The time, the historical time, which is not at all the time of the trial, of course. The trial doesn't start in 1939. It doesn't start of the beginning of the work of Eichmann. It starts in the beginning of anti-Semitism. You know, the Eichmann trial starts with a big discourse by the first witness, we'll call him, called as a witness, to tell about history of anti-Semitism. So, first of all, it's to acknowledge that we can put time, we can compress time. Okay? And if I'm saying this is the seventh session of the trial, everybody knows that there were seven sessions before outside the film. But they exist in the film because he's saying it's the seventh session of the film, right? And this is one. So, one of the things was this idea that 360 hours can be an hour and a half. That 5 years can be within an hour and a half, 128 minutes. And by the way, I want to make a parenthesis here to say that I was always fascinated by one thing, which is the fantastic admiration of dictators, of totalitarian figures to cinema. Stalin loved cinema, we know it all. I mean, Mao. Great admirer of cinema, and Hitler, of course. If there is a totalitarian medium, is the possibility to determine time and history. If the possibility of the absolute maîtrise, mastering,
padronanza
del tempo e l'istoria, this is totalitarianism. So there was this admiration to cinema, right? To the possibilities of the chronographia. It's a totalitarian relation. Let's acknowledge it. One of the things which were very important, was to extract the material from its archival status. I mean, first of all, the material was digitalized. Again, it's a material that was shot in video, but we digitalized it. It was an old format, 2-inch NTSC material, which is the first.
It was not shot in film.
No.
It was a video for a radio.
It was the first ever video recording outside a TV studio.
I read or watched an interview or something where you say that the tapes, sono vecchi, modi.
I mean.
Vecchio format.
Video recording was used for the first time as a recording. It was invented by Ampax company, and it was used for the first time as a test in 1958, only 3 years before the Eichmann trial. And the first video recording that was shown publicly was in an exhibition. In a visit that in Khrushchev's discourse, he visited the Ampax factory, and when he went
up... Where was the Ampax factory? Where is the
Ampax? Ampax factory was upstate New York somewhere. And he walked, and in the end, they were showing him that he's walking inside. When Khrushchev comes back to Russia, he launches within the Ministry of Defense a program of recording, because he's sure that what he was saying is a new way of espionage, spying. Okay, so 58, we're starting to record in video, but record in video inside closed spaces. I mean, Ampax test and the court, the studio, TV studio. And it was recorded on very big tapes. It was 2-inch. 2-inch is... It's a 5 centimeters, right? 2-inch. 5 centimeters, 60 minutes. It's a tape big like this with aluminium, very heavy, huge machine, monotube, black and white, of course, NTSC, American system, where there was no way of editing. The only editing was done is to cut the video and to put one on the other. Leo Horowitz, which is a very important figure in the history of American documentary.
Ancora vivo?
No. Communist, founder of the collective of workers, cinematographers, did very important, blacklisted. He founded this collective, were doing social films and were giving the films to the workers in Los Angeles in the big studios that were putting their films behind the films of the majors in order to develop and giving them back. So they were stealing material, doing films, worker film, the workers were developing for them, etc. I mean, they did very important kind of work. He's the founder of documentary cinema in America. And Leo Horowitz, that he's the only one from the group that refused to denounce the other, was blacklisted. So he couldn't work in America. In fact, part of the group was Ilya Kazan. Leo Horowitz himself was denounced by Ilya Kazan in the McCarthy years. So he was the only one that said, I don't know nobody, I won't say who is communist. And he was communist till, in fact, 1958. Leo Horowitz comes to Jerusalem with the idea that the man that proposed to the Israeli government to film is somebody which his name is Milton Fruchman. It's not really important, but Leo Horowitz coming with the idea that he wants to give an image of fascism. He wants to give, and he's saying in one interview, when I came to Israel, I realized that the Israelis are not interested in only in fascism. What they're interested is in the mise-en-scène of Jewish suffering. They're not interested in fascism. So he's disappointed. So he filmed, come back to the subject, he films in video. He have a complicated installation, which is he have four cameras, video, and he chooses one at the time. Okay, what is called, he's mixing one of the time, which is he have four monitors. He said, I want this, I want that. Okay, I'm getting all this material on this very old format, and it's a, when I got it, it was 37 years old.
So Leo was the director of the
trial? Leo was the director of the trial. He was the director of the trial. When I get the material, it's kind of, everything is flickering because of the time. Everything is flickering.
Trial, processo.
The trial. When I'm getting the material, when I'm getting the video, first of all, we had to find a machine that can read it, so we build a machine out of different machine. We took some, there was in BBC, they had some old thing, and in Belgium, we build a machine. It's a huge machine that weighs 700 kilos. Imagine a video, 700 kilos machine. We start to look at this material, it's all flickering like this. And from the very beginning, the idea, there was this idea of time. I mean, the material should look of our contemporary. How to erase exactly what I explained before, which is the inscription of time on this material as materiality, on the physicality of the material. So we digitalized everything on a format that doesn't exist. It's only 10 years ago, but it looks as if it was 100 years ago. There were, at the time, there was a cassette that was called D1. It's non-compressed material. Maybe René remember the D1 were big cassettes like this, which it's a suitcase, big cassette, and it's not non-compressed. So we moved all the material on digital, which allowed us to put all this material inside the machine, and there were technicians that were working on reconstruction of the line. So first of all, we enhanced the material. So we had a video material, one. And then after the editing of the film, there were 26 graphic designers. Oh, I took a director of photography that makes lights, and we took sample of each axe of the court, and we designed lights on the images, shadows. Okay.
Che non c'erano invece, che non c'erano.
No.
No, 26 disegnatori, come si dice, designers?
Grafici
hanno lavorato a questo film, anche hanno fatto, per esempio, la riflessione.
In the glass, on the glass booth.
Del pubblico.
Okay, the images of the reflection on the glass booth, those are the intercuts that I had from Leo Horvitz of the public. Don't forget, you see only twice in the film the public, right? When the camera turns, right? Which is a construction. Because if not, you are in a situation that you are in the court as a spectator. So, of course, the reflection, it's the court. Okay? So this is one. This is to decide from the very beginning, from what is the point of view from where I'm looking at the material, spectator one. It means that one camera I couldn't use because it was a camera that was kind of a position of a camera. It couldn't be a position of somebody in the court. Of course, no camera could be the position of somebody in the court, but there is a kind of a relation. You know, there is a height which is the height of the camera. No, here there is, so we are in a spectatorship situation. So first of all, the material is clean. Secondly, we come and we light the material. So you know, if I'm putting just on the angle, there is a shadow and the angle, but there is a person that is moving, it means that we have to do it image by image, because he have to pass in front of the shadow. So we decided what will be the lights of the court. We didn't invented new lights. We looked at the structure of the lights that existed in the court, and we said, this, the video, lying, remember, lying truly is a basic notion, right? If you are in the court and you have this light, in the court will be a shadow like this, for example, behind the judges. The video just doesn't see this shadow, but the spectator in the court saw the shadow, so we put the shadow, okay? So we designed shadows, you know, which gives perspective. But then there is, okay, this is one. We talked about imagery, enhancement of the image. The other thing is that we had fixed images. It was a fixed images. Because he couldn't, because Leohovitz, the cameras were hidden in the court. This was the condition. So he had only very small movements. The pen that you see all over the court is our construction. It's three images together and it moves. Okay? So in fact you can say this is a digital attack on the idea of the veracity of an image. Okay, what's this project about? And the same thing that I'm describing now, I could describe about the Stasi film. This is image, but then there is sound question. There is the sound question. First of all, the sound that you hear mostly in the film, it's not the sound of the video. It's the sound that was recorded for the radio, because they have three microphones. As you know, all the microphones on the video, we have only one audio channel, and it comes with the image, and it's a compressed sound, especially at that time. But they had also microphone for the radio, which was the quality was much better because it was separated recording. So we took the sound of the radio and we resynchronized it with the video. We had to synchronize 20 images by 20 images because it moves. So suddenly we had a sound that we could work with it. And we had also the artifacts in the video. So we had three sounds. We had the sounds, the general sound of the video, the sound from the radio, and a sound which was the general environment sound. And we had to do a choice. What is Eichmann's voice? If I'm taking recordings of lectures of Giorgio Agamben, and I decide, and I'm taking them 20 years later, different recordings from the year 2009, what will be Giorgio Agamben's voice? I mean, we can bring some people, some students, to say, no, this is the voice. No, that's what the voice. It depends on the space and it depends of the moment. What is the voice? So we had to choose a voice of Eichmann. Eichmann speaking lower, more hot, kind of warm voice. No, it's easy. So the thing is that the film keeps the possibility of listening. You have different voices. Sometimes it's more metallic. Sometimes it's warmer. But all those are samples from all the voices that we had. But we used the radio to do it. We compared, for example, a video to radio, and we said, this moment, we will make out of the radio the exact like the video. Just bringing in, giving him the body. I talked about the follies. We had these actors that were working and repeating all the movements, the paper, the glasses, the pencil, etc. Okay? We gave a space. And the last thing that we did, that we brought a chorale into auditorium, 300...
What?
A chorale. A core. Mm-hmm. Of 300 people into auditorium, and there was a director that we wrote before the partition, and they were singing. What they were singing, for example, they were doing kind of like this, or in the beginning you have, and then there is somebody saying, it's him, in Hebrew. I taught him to say, it's him. And this is the first scene, for example, when they say, it's him. Or there was just the public, just to record silence, 300 people silent, and one person doing, and the other one saying, and one opening bonbon
or something.
So this is together. We just repeated. We lied really. We repeated reality. Right? All this together, all this, and of course, in the end, it's run. It transfers to film, etc. This is the caption of time. Caption, to capture time and to pose it in this very important notion, which is the chronographia. This is part of the chronography.
Avete capito che è un film completamente manipolato.
Il film è completamente film. It's important. In fact, yeah. When we are looking at news, when we are looking at a discourse, just a discourse in the parliament, when we are looking at surveillance camera, this is a non-manipulated image. And this is its problem, that it's a non-manipulated image. That it's an image that tries to give us the idea that it is pure.
It does not lie truly.
This is why it's a lie.
But in this sense, where does this truly stay? Where is the truly in your lying truly?
Oh, the truly is the relation, the recognition
of a truth.
Of a truth.
The event of what you know, in terms of, I mean, I don't want to use Badiou language, but in terms of what he was saying, what Eichmann has said, I accept as a truth, or what Mr. B says. I think I just want to ask a question to either of you in relation to the images that are in the second film, I Love You All, because for me, yesterday, and we talked about it, these are surveillance images. They're not supposedly not always they're supposed to be recording of facts, no? Of things that happen. They assume that they don't create a mise-en-scène supposedly, because they're not known to be present, no? A camera is hiding, you're not supposed to see the camera, and you do what you do, and the camera is just recording those facts. But in fact, through the film and the coloring of this voice of the material, you have a sense of a very of desire, of subjectivity, and in fact a kind of mise-en-scène, you know, that is internalized, like a Foucauldian panopticon, that at the end the people who lived in the GDR could just simply assume that they were always being filmed. And in a way, their gestures, everything they did, was for a camera that may or may not exist. And it's very strange, you know, that this camera that purports to be completely recording facts and not at all coloring what happens, in fact, in the most manipulative way, colors what happens. So, forse non è una domanda, però
no, questo è un fatto. Per esempio, quando vengono usate le riprese con una telecamera nella strada per provare un delitto, no? Per provare un'accusa, appunto lì si vede che non è possibile, perché per esempio c'è una telecamera qui, una telecamera qui, una telecamera qui. E invece ci deve essere la sequenza completa, e lì appunto c'è un'assunzione di una vera true life, it's not true.
No, in fact, that's why.
You know, yesterday, Yesterday, when we talked about this idea that you internalize the camera, and then you're mise en scène yourself. I mean, this thing that, for example, mettere in scena. This idea that in London, it's not important if there is cameras. What is important is the sign that is saying this place is under surveillance. It's more important than the recording of the camera, right? Here, this place is under CCTV for your safety. Okay. So it's appealing. I think that it's true. But suddenly I'm thinking, following what just Giorgio said, that it's not true that there is no mise en scène in the surveillance camera. The position of the surveillance camera, it's a mise en scène. It means, for example, it insinuates that everybody is suspicious. You know, the quality says those are suspects.
Exactly.
It means that it creates the narration of suspicion. You know, this thing that when we see a shop from up and somebody is burglaring and we don't see really the face. What it means, this idea that there is a mise-en-scène, that there is a space of interpretation. There is a possibility of interpretation.
Ma in lo stesso modo che Cinema Verite ha provato a provocare una realtà, un accesso alla realtà, queste immagini del surveillance, they also in a way provoke something beyond just assuming that you are a suspect. They also kind of provoke, in the most extreme sense, a kind of a reality. I mean, that's really more than Cinema Verite ever dreamed.
Io ho una domanda,
sì,
legata a quella sua di prima, cioè del craftsman, del crafting material, e la questione del tempo. Però mi interessava il fatto che il film, ma anche non volevo troppo centrarmi sul film, anche l'opera d'arte in generale, quando prende questo materiale ruvido e lo riattualizza, no? Quando questo materiale è un materiale storico, tu hai detto che hai ridigitalizzato tutto quanto, e quindi questo passaggio qui ha in qualche modo riportato all'attuale quel materiale lì, che non perché come se fossero cancellati i segni del tempo, no? Questa cosa qui è frutto di una specie di ricomposizione, una specie di unità stilistica, o c'è anche qualcos'altro? Mi sembra che lo stile abbia in qualche maniera un'unità formale, come?
No. It's neither style or obedience to the idea of the spectacle. It comes from the very basic will or wish to speak about present time. It's not a historical film, it's a film using historical material to speak about present time. What we could say as a political performance. It's a
perché non coincide lì con questo evento.
we have to think about what I mean by historical film. We have two histories. I mean, it was said very clearly in the beginning. We have the history of the trial. It's not a film about the Eichmann trial. It's a film with the Eichmann trial. It's not a film about Nazism. It's a film with Nazism. Yeah? These two historical times, and those together, they are about a very contemporary, present, more than contemporary, present thing, which is obedience, bureaucratic crime. Okay. So this is, and the question is, it comes from a theoretical reading, of course, Arendt, but others. It's Arendt, it's Foucault and Agamben for the second film. But those, the question is how to talk with so heavy historical material, talk about present. It means how not to recreate, first of all, anachronism, and secondly, talk about the past. What already passed, what is not anymore here, which is here. I mean, I'm not an historian. I'm very interested in history, but I'm not a historian. I didn't build a new narration on the history of Nazism. I didn't build a new narration on the history of the Stasi. I use the Stasi to talk about this question of society of civilians on one hand, but also the limits of the illusion that image can show. So all the crafting is built to act on the present political time. I mean, when I'm reading Agamben, or I'm reading Foucault, that are using 16th or 17th century, I don't think that they're re-telling me the history, reconstructing the 17th for me, or the 18th. I know that it's a use. It's used in order, too. I mean, it's exactly what we call perspective. What's the perspective? And the mise-en-scène, the crafting, it's an answer. It's a creative answer that may be successful, maybe not. This is up to you. In order to have this thing, of course, that we are there looking at the past, but in the same time, we are in the present with him. Just that sometimes I've been asked, but why not a fiction? I mean, you so expensive, so complicated technically. You had the text. You could have taken actors to have a court, to take actors to play with exactly the same text, same thing, and it will be, I don't know, 10 days of shooting and finish. You can even do it in real time and finish. I mean, it's so simple. You put light. It's a simple structure. Why not? And I have only one answer for that. Which is, I think, in the heart of our, what I'm interested in more to hear about this notion of truth. Nobody can play Eichmann so good as Eichmann. He's the ideal casting. Eichmann is the ideal casting in order to play Eichmann. Gidon Hausner is the ideal casting to play Hausner. Why? Because they are alive again. Where? In a film. Did I answer a little bit?
Sì.
No, but you can You can insist if I'm, if you have the impression that I'm not answering or no, not thinking with you.
Rispondo in italiano. Sì, questa cosa del fatto che la storia viene ripresentata nel momento attuale in cui le speriamo, cioè la storia, io la vedo, è contemporanea e questo succede sempre. E mi interessava appunto questa cosa del una specie di non sono sicuro di capire la differenza tra per prendere Eichmann as himself e reenact the fact. Non so perché, nel senso, you had the chance to have this material, but se tu non avevi questi materiali qui, non avresti mai fatto questo film. È impossibile fare questo film senza il materiale originale. Sì.
If I didn't have this material, I would have tried, for example, to find the material of the trial of the managers of the Bhopal factory. Do you remember the Bhopal catastrophe? In India, a few years ago, maybe 20 years ago already, there was the chemical factory that exploded, and there was a disease. I mean, a huge human and ecological catastrophe. And there was a trial of the Bhopal person. I don't know if it was filmed, but I would have tried to find this kind of trial, because I believe that we would have kind of patterns that will be similar. But of course, I wouldn't build. Why? Because I need in order, and this is once again we are coming to a kind of a maybe mystery. Yeah, maybe we can give it the notion of mystery. I need for myself and as a spectator the recognition of authenticity that only the document can give us. Only the document can give us the notion, the relation of authenticity. Maybe a fiction would be fantastic, yeah, but it would be a fiction.
What does it mean, document? What does it mean, document? There is something that places itself
in the middle. Take it to the other side. What it means, this genuine relation to authenticity, why we recognize in the document its being document. This what means the document. The recognition. The instant, the explicit primary recognition, which makes also which makes out of it a problematic issue, as I said before. I mean, we recognize that those people on the screen are starving, and if it will be a mise-en-scène with actors of starving, maybe it will be much more dramatic. So, but we recognize it, and on this explicit. This contract of the sharing truthness is a condition, a primary condition.
Sì, credo che questa idea dell'autenticità, cioè, sia proprio una cosa interna, nel senso che pensando al termine paresia nel testo, no, di Foucault, discorso di vita, viene esposta come quella forma di espressione in cui quello che il soggetto pronuncia corrisponde al soggetto stesso in qualche modo. Quindi pensare a questo film con degli attori proprio
proprio prenderebbe un'altra, cioè nascerebbe per un'altra natura. Quindi sì, cioè, pensare che appunto anche il testimone che realmente si trova là e giura, fa questo giuramento, no, di pronunciare la sua verità, perché alla fine non è la verità, quella che comunque è la propria. E, sì, credo che sia, cioè, una cosa da notare bene a proposito del film.
Però è importante quello che hai detto prima, non basta per l'autenticità il documento, no? Il documento è più interessante perché crea una duplicità di livelli, cioè il documento e l'operazione di truly se l'hai. No, quindi no, si poteva avere l'idea che tu dicessi l'autenticità del documento, no, l'autenticità poi sta nella seconda operazione anche. No? Sì.
The authenticity is the one is not the fact that we have the 17th century document, that you are reading it for us. It's through the reading that we discover, that we recognize its authenticity. It's through its mise-en-scène that we discover the line truly that we discover. You said it beautifully. I mean, like what you said. I mean, there is no possibility to shift it into the fiction because it's attached to its documenticity, if you want.
Però posso dire una cosa, che guardando il film secondo me sorgono due domande, no? Contemporanee. Una è credo o non credo ad Eichmann, e l'altra è credo o non credo a questo film.
Si vale.
E quindi
si vale a Eichmann.
No, e quindi ti fai, almeno io mi ponevo, se avessi visto tutto il materiale, no? O se l'avessi visto montato da un'altra persona, la verità sarebbe stata la stessa? Cioè, credi che sia un po' la tua verità su Eichmann? O credi che ci sia anche un'oggettività perché è un documento?
What I like very much in your question is the need to use different notions altogether, objectivity and truth and your truth, and you know, this the thing that turns around a question, which is, first of all, I did something that I could avoid it, which was when I get the material and I took tape number one, I realized that tape number one is not the first one of the trial. There was no catalog. It was mixed, the material. Because, as I said, they cut for the editing, they put after, they used material to give to TV, it came back. And it was all mixed. The first thing that I did what the archives didn't do 37 years, and it took me 9 months. I took 10,000 pages of the trial. I put the first cassette and I listened. And when I found a document or a name, I looked for it in the index of the trial. And I arranged all the trial in the chronology of the trial. I looked at the trial. This is one. First of all, I looked at the material. And I did a catalog. I did a catalog, which the archives never did. Just from one to that. This is one. But I also, before, because I was waiting, because we had a juridical fight with the archive to get outside the material, I had a lot of time. And I read as much as possible about the other chronology, which is El Fatto Historico, the chronology of the history. The destruction of the Jews of Europe by Hilberg, and Martin Gilbert and many others. Of course, Aaron, but many others. You know, the historical nation. So I'm not, I didn't come inside, I refused the idea of the sponge spectators. I will just kind of, you know, the thing will come to me. The thing will come, I will absorb. No. There was a work. I mean, I studied the history of Second World War, the rise of fascism, as I studied the chronology of the trial. But then I framed it. And I think that I think that this is a basic. I'm doing it.
Just a white paper.
I need a white paper. Just to remind the kind of a stupid. But I will cut it.
Yeah,
I will cut it. Just to remind. I mean, a thing which is a basic. Really, really. What it means? This framing. It is all the I mean, in the moment that I have a frame, the question is, I'm hiding or I'm showing? I had to decide what I'm not going to show, first of all. So you're asking about, it's my truth? Maybe this is, I had to, first of all, not what I'm going to show. I mean, the frame is minor from all what there is outside. So what will be outside the frame? So I had to reframe. Also, of course, this reframing was a line. But he said, I frame it through a combination of elements. First of all, we decided at that moment to have this Pascalian supposition, which is, let's see what happened if Eichmann tells the truth. An accused in a court have the right to lie, right? We don't expect him to come and say, yeah. Let's see what happens if he lies. Secondly, to consider that we will rebuild a trial that will be the trial of Eichmann, not the trial of Nazism, not the trial of anti-Semitism, the trial of Eichmann, which means that what Eichmann, the deeds of Eichmann, the department that he built, and his environment, including the Jewish Council, of course, that are part of it, but all things that are not under the bureaucratic or administrative responsibility of Eichmann are outside the frame. So the framing was very important. So you could say that this is the Yalsivan's truth, the framing.
Comunque credo che, cioè, che sia così anche per il documentario stesso, no? Anche se c'è la finzione, c'è ovunque, anche nel documentario più, cioè la purezza non esiste. Cioè, comunque c'è una telecamera e dietro c'è qualcuno che guarda.
At the moment that the surveillance camera is put here and not here, there is a framing. It's a
manipulation.
I wouldn't like to forget the etymology of manipulation. I think that in the moment that we forget the etymology of manipulation, we give it a moral value.
So you don't give it moral value.
To manipulation? No, it's a description of my work.
Of course.
What you're doing? I'm a manipulator of image. Just.
No, però per questa ragione, I think for me what comes out through the second film, I Love You All, is that the surveillance image, even though it has this idea that it doesn't have a director behind it, it doesn't have a manipulator, it is a manipulated image. And that's why when you said, Giorgio said, this film is completely manipulated, and you said, no, this film is a film, and I'm just trying to add the category of the surveillance camera is also in that same logic.
You're saying this that civilian camera doesn't have a director, but the civilian camera have a direction. Inherent in it. It have a direction. It have a direction. The civilian camera, the direction is down there is somebody that is potentially a criminal. Potentially a criminal, he is already a criminal. The potentiality makes out of him, already he bears guilt. Because the one that is not under the camera is a criminal. The one that doesn't have a mobile phone, that doesn't have internet, that is not under the surveillance camera, he is the criminal. But all the others, potential criminality, it's criminality. I love you all, or specialista?
No, mi piaceva sapere come questa parola, cosa posso, com'è nata, come, cioè, quali sfaccettature porta questa, non so, io la sento come un termine molto contemporaneo. E
it is, and it's not the specialist. In fact, the problem in English, the title in English is a very bad title. Because
the specialist?
Yeah. It's a bad title. It's a bad translation of the title.
Qual era il titolo? Qual era
il titolo in italiano è uno specialista.
Uno specialista.
A specialist. In French is un specialist. In English there is a problem, which is to say a specialist, it's just doesn't work, but this is the idea. It's a specialist. And in fact, there was a problem of copyright, because specialist exists, it's a John Travolta film, so we couldn't use specialist because of copyright in America, right? So the specialist is a problem. Uno specialista, un specialista. Okay, first of all, this is interesting. Just before I did The Specialist, which was a film about the genocide in Rwanda, which is a short film. Did you see it? It's a film inspired from La Jetée. It's a film with stills images. And it's called A Genocide Later. A Genocide Later. It's called Itzembatzemba. It's the name.
A Genocide Later?
Later.
Later.
Un genocide dopo. Which is this same kind of idea. It's a specialist among specialists. And of course it comes from the chapter, if I remember well, 5 of Arendt, which is the expert. You know, expert will be this idea of the expertise, the specialist is the one that present himself as a specialist, as being recognized as a specialist. Sometimes I'm presented as the expert in the expert. Right? This is the moment that you're recognized as a specialist. Eichmann was a specialist in a domain that he invented, or it was invented for him, a domain of speciality, which was Jewish problem. Jewish problem means there is a solution. Because the definition of a problem is something that have a solution. So if there is a Jewish problem, he was specialist in the Jewish problem. In fact, he was specialist in the Jewish solution.
Exactly.
And this is why I'm... he is the one that is specialized in... And this is why it starts with the immigration. He's specialist in forced immigration. And he's becoming, and it's important to remind that he's becoming a criminal figure within a historical context. Because Eichmann, in the context of in charge of the Ministry of Immigration in Italy, he wouldn't be a criminal. It would be just a great worker. Giorgio, I'm interested in something, this thing that we left aside, which is the relation between truth and authenticity.
Truth and what?
Authenticity.
Authenticity is la parola autenticità, come sai, ha un certo un po' sospetta, no, oggi, no? Perché, e non è la stessa cosa che verità, perché pretende a una specie di carattere di verità originale. Mentre quello che tu mostri è che la verità è un processo, è un'operazione, non viene da se stessa. In autenticità proprio nella parola credo che c'è autos, cioè da se stesso, qualcosa che è appunto in se stesso originalmente vero. Mentre mi pare che quello che tu dici è che la verità è un processo, un lavoro, framing, a manipulation of a manipulation. So la vera autenticità è una manipolazione della manipolazione. Would you accept this?
Yeah, I think I almost wanted to hear it because I find suspect that I'm suspicious about the idea of authenticity. You know, authenticity, there is this thing that it's transcendental. It's there. It's a thing. Yeah, manipulation of manipulation.
E Benio mi diceva anche sempre, la purezza non è mai nell'origine, è il risultato. Cioè, puro è il risultato, non l'origine.
Anche ha parlato nel suo corso due settimane fa sulla questa origine, anche non è solo, like you were problematizing the idea of origin, saying that it's not always in the past.
L'origine non è nel passato, appunto è contemporanea, è presente.
You wanted to ask something?
Yeah, so clear doesn't exist the truth, because I'm talking about the truth sounds like something about the God, but it was clear that each of us have sorry, I don't want to mistake
speak. No, faccelo in italiano.
È ovvio che ognuno ha la sua verità, perché posso dire che per me fa freddo e per me, e infatti da questo poi nasce un po' la relazione fra ci si domanda come potrebbe esserci una relazione tra tre persone che dicono di detenere la verità assoluta, cioè io dico la verità, tu dici io dico la verità, un'altra persona dice io dico la verità, non ci sarà mai un dialogo, però questo è una questione che riguarda più la religione e riguardo invece alla questione del tempo, invece molto interessante, ho pensato a una cosa, ovvero che come si può giudicare un fatto se un fatto è passato? Perché sicuramente se rispetto a questo fatto passato io ho una domanda rispetto a questo fatto passato, ovviamente cambierà anche la risposta, nel senso che se per esempio io ti domando oggi come stai, sicuramente se tu mi rispondi fra 30 anni la risposta cambierà. Quindi la manipolazione su un film come questo, come su tutto il materiale, penso sul genocidio ebraico, sia stato manipolato in base al fatto che oggi c'è Israele. Nel senso che come si potrebbe oggi, per esempio, vedere un film sul grande imperatore cinese, no? Sappiamo benissimo che le nostre opinioni riguardo alla Cina oggi sono diverse del prima che avvenisse tutta la questione del Tibet, eccetera, eccetera. Quindi, ed è una cosa, questa cosa mi viene in mente perché Italia, e ancora oggi lo vediamo libero, io lo ritengo questa cosa del tempo, quindi a livello di giudizio è già falsa di per sé, perché è passato del tempo e quindi le risposte cambiano.
Sei tu.
I heard.
I just want to say I'm sorry that this will be the last, because we take a short pause and we come back. Giorgio has to leave because there's a friend coming.
So maybe I want to hear you also about this question, but I will say just two things. I hear few things inside. The relation, one, it's a very basic political idea. The relation between the fact of the extermination of the Jews and the state of Israel, it's a political construction. It's a political construction that shouldn't have any influence whatsoever about the question of the extermination of the Jews. Whenever Israel becomes an absolute fascist country, it doesn't whatsoever influence in something the way that we structure the discourse on the extermination of the Jews. From the simple reason that the extermination of the Jews was the extermination of the human beings in form of Jews, as I think that Arendt is putting it. Okay, which is the fact of the extermination and the political use of it are two completely different things. As a point. The second point is when you are talking about this idea about absolute truth. Absolute truth. You insinuate already that there are degrees of truth and there is an absolute truth somewhere, right? But the relation between facts and truth shouldn't be a relation of doubt on facts because of discourse of truth. Discourse of truth, I'm of course referring to Foucault. I mean, we can have our different truth as a narrative performance. I mean, tell me what you see around and I will tell you what I see. And both of us have different truth, but there is a fact is that you are there and I'm here, and for you I'm there and you are here. Okay, this is a fact between us. And to narrate outside the fact, it's in a way what we call delirium. To narrate outside fact, it's fiction. And so this is a kind of a relation.
Volevo solo precisare una cosa. Il fatto appunto che questo film, o in generale stiamo dicendo, non pretende di essere la verità, ma una verità, non deve essere assolutamente letto nel senso del relativismo. Cioè, il fatto che non ci sia la verità non significa che tutte le verità sono relative. Al contrario, una verità è singolare, quindi una verità importante è qui lo statuto dell'articolo indeterminativo e dell'articolo determinativo di cui parlavi prima, uno e là. Il fatto che sia una verità singolare, come è singolare ciascun individuo, non significa che è relativo nel modo più assoluto, anzi quella è veramente vera, appunto quella verità, quella una verità, mentre la verità si presenta già falsificata.
La verità, this was also what I want to say, that la verità, it's a relative notion. But a truth...
It's not relative.
La
verità. No, a is not relative. Perfect, no. You said perfect. La verità implica la relatività.
Yeah.
Una verità non è relativa, not perché relative. Mette in gioco l'individuo,
exactly.
Come la paresia.
Exactly. A truth, it's not a relative notion. The truth. I mean, exactly this inversion is a fundamental idea.
Va bene.
Con questa verità possiamo interrompere.
Facciamo una pausa. Noi torniamo in una ora, forse. Però